And we are live.
We're live.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 170, right? 170?
Yep. Episode 170.
Episode 170 of Live at the Hive, Digital Marketing from the Trenches. I'm Dan Nedelko.
I'm Stacy DeSantis.
Matt Stefanich.
And today, we're talking about the end of the digital marketing world. It's all over, man. It's over.
Pretty much, right?
Here's a quiz. Can you identify this movie line? It's all over, man. It's all over. Bill Paxton, Aliens. Best movie. Oh.
I haven't seen Aliens. I've seen clips of it in memes, but you know.
You've never seen Aliens?
No, and you would have thunk that I would have. You know,
it is literally one of the best movies ever made. It is so good.
About Bill Paxton. I once ate tacos with him.
Did you? No way.
Rest in peace, Bill. He's a great actor. Well, he passed away like last year or 2 years ago or something like that.
Did he?
Yep. Mm-hmm. He sure did.
Yeah,
he sure did.
Been the tacos.
Yeah. All right. So, anyways,
could have been the tacos.
Oh wow! Too soon, Stacy. He passed in 2017, unfortunately. But yeah. I guess you guys weren't buddies. This is getting becoming highly inappropriate here.
Hey, this is a digital marketing podcast. Settle down now.
This is true. Let's settle down and get serious.
Yeah.
It is the end of the world. Maybe you can pull up the Facebook.com business post. There's some good, maybe I just have to put it in here for you, but let me do that. So iOS 14 is coming. And one of the big things is that I think Apple set a cascade off with the ability to prevent apps from tracking you. So every time the security concern pops up, you'll get a pop-up. And what Apple was committed to doing is stopping all of this data sucking that Google and Facebook are doing. So for Facebook advertisers, it's the audience network, which is the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. It's a most very, very powerful tool for targeting. And if you scroll down right to the second last paragraph.
Mm-hmm. Right here.
So you can highlight, we expect these changes here.
Mm-hmm.
So we expect these changes will disproportionately affect audience network given its heavy dependence on app advertising. Like all ad networks on iOS 14, advertiser ability to target and measure their campaigns on audience network will be impacted. Publishers should expect their ability to effectively monetize on audience network to decrease.
Listen to this next sentence though.
Yeah. Ultimately.
Go ahead.
Despite our best efforts, Apple's updates may render audience networks so ineffective on iOS 14 that it may not make sense to offer it on iOS 14. Sound like a YouTuber reading like a reaction.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, thank you.
But that's going to be insane. Yeah.
So this is also cascaded to Google stopping third-party cookies as well. Mm-hmm. So this is a massive change if you're in the world of digital marketing, and you're going to have to pinpoint where you're using the audience networks and various retargeting tools and various targeting tools on the Google network and on the Facebook network, which are by far the two largest advertising networks in the world. So prepare for it. Educate yourself about it. If you are doing advertising and you've got someone helping you with your Facebook advertising, your audience capabilities and lookalike audiences, they may in fact totally disappear. And TBD what the solution and the next steps would be. But one of the things that I would strongly suggest, this is going to be the new normal.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have too heavy of a reliance on any single channel, whether it be paid, organic. Make sure that you've got an omni-channel approach and that you're generating leads. So that, you know, if you've got a very heavy reliance on Facebook advertising, things are going to change. Now, the third-party cookies on Google will not impact directly within the Google network itself. This is third-party, right?
Yeah.
So that is how they were, you know, across everything that you do on the web. That's how all of these these this data was tracked. In a similar way, you know, people say on a mobile device, well, if I use my VPN, I'm going to be safe from being pinpointed. But what a lot of app developers will do is they use the Wi-Fi to triangulate you, your position and your location, which cannot be blocked by VPN at all. So they're using ways to get around it. So this is definitely a huge thing. If you're in the industry, you know, it would be great to hear your comments, but definitely it should be preparation time, because upon the launch of iOS 14, I believe that's when Google and Facebook are going to pull the trigger on that stuff.
Yeah. Did they give again a date for this update? Because I know on the beta, it's apparently out already on the iOS 14 beta, which I just confirmed, but I don't know if they have a solid release date for 14.
14 is September 16th.
Yeah, so there's still time, yeah. Yeah, no, so wait, plenty of time to get yourself kind of educated on it for sure.
Diversify.
Yeah, 2020.
Yeah, maybe we'll do like a quick TLDR just of what people need to know and how it affects them. So maybe keep a lookout for that.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
For sure. Cool. Alrighty. Yeah, so I think
our content team.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So with that, that's kind of what's been going on with the What's New. Some big stuff, so we'll definitely keep everyone updated as this kind of progresses throughout the months.
Actually, I just looked it up. iOS 14 was released on March 4th.
What? Really? On,
yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, so that's yesterday. Okay.
That, you know, one thing, too, like, it's going to impact digital marketers, but another thing, food for thought for actual users, it's going to impact your ability to get ads that are targeted to you. And maybe you don't want that because the whole privacy piece, but I don't know. I kind of like the fact sometimes when I'm searching for something now, I'm getting ads and, you know, finding out about sales and all that other great stuff for something that I'm searching for. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Spoken like a true marketer. Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a shift and a change in the way that data, you know, and that digital marketers are going to have to adjust. I mean, we went from what is effectively an infantile series of platforms that just exploded in growth in a relatively short period of time. Mm-hmm. And when that ends up happening, I think, you know, as privacy laws and people realize what's happening, and then the government starts to realize what's happening, and the meteoric size, like the absolute sheer size of these companies, like Google is literally has the GDP of like countries, like these companies are turning into countries with the level of power that they have. And so I think the evolution is good, and shifting is good. It's just going to change, and people don't like change, right? Nobody is a real big fan of that kind of change.
Yeah. And it's the, like you say many times, it's the Wild West out there, right? They can switch things up anytime they'd like, or whatever. A company adopts a new, ethics policy where they're trying to push privacy and things. So, I mean, it can all change in a blink of an eye. So we shouldn't get used to the way things come by, for sure.
Yeah. It's about always adapting to your current state, right? Like what's going on, right?
For sure.
Absolutely.
Cool. And that actually segues into what we're going to be talking about this week on creating content that generates demand, right? We're creating content that resonates with people, that people want to see, that's specific to them. And we'll see how that kind of generates demand and some of the stuff that the content team and Stacy has been working on recently to get that going.
For sure.
So without further ado, we'll continue on to the first slide here. Sorry, one second. Let me share my screen. So yeah, so this week we're just going to be discussing, you know, demand generating content, buying rules and staging, how the content mapping works for your projects and for your content, right? Conversion paths, really important for your content too, right? You want to make sure that your content aligns with what step within the conversion path these leads are in. Discussing a little bit about the types of lead magnets. We love our lead magnets here. We do tons of different types of lead magnets, whether it's a landing page, contest, etc. We'll be talking about the types in depth there. And then just some extra lead magnet examples that we'll highlight for you guys that we've done, as well as some tips. So some good stuff coming up.
I think a couple of things just to kind of highlight this and to start it off. you know, just to backtrack to that iOS 14 and people and some companies having a huge reliance on Facebook and Google Ads, that's a very expensive proposition. And by creating content, what you're able to do, especially quality content, is get people that are coming in and demand, like they're seeing, they're finding you via search, they're finding you via inbound links, they're finding you a variety of different ways. And then by engaging with them, you'll be able to kind of get around this utter dependence that some people have on Facebook ads specifically. Yeah, right?
For sure.
Timely is that?
How timely is it?
That's why. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's true. Like, and it also talks about what we're always, that quote that we're always talking about from Gary Vee, you know, like jab, jab, hook, right? Right hook. I think I'm using my left. Anyway, doesn't matter. But we're offering a piece of useful information and we're asking for their information in return. So it's an exchange of goods almost. But I think what's going to be really fun to talk about in this episode is the fact that you don't always have to give away money or a giveaway. You can actually offer content that is relevant to your brand that people are actually searching for, right?
Yeah, we're gonna talk a little bit about perceived value, and I've got a good anecdote from way back in the day, in the early 90s. Yes, that's right. When I owned a Japan Camera 1-hour photo lab, it's a good anecdote about perceived value and what that actually means. And that's a real key to your content creation strategy, is doing research using things like, and I don't want to get ahead of it because I think we're going to talk about Answer the Public and some of those other tools. But it's really getting into the head of your potential customer and being able to provide them with something that's incredibly useful. And if you think about TikTok cooking videos, for example, right? Or, what were they called before BuzzFeed did them? I always forget. Tasties. Tasties. You know, that's an example of really like for perceived value, right? I don't know how to cook it and I watch somebody cook it, then I'm going to try to cook it. I feel more confident. So we'll get into all of that, but you know, that's kind of the high level overview. So why don't we dive on in?
Cool. So first off, we're going to be talking about creating content in the buyer role, right? So this is kind of understanding what target audience you need to find, which target audience works for you, and specify that content going towards that audience. Stacey, you do a lot of that with a content team when you're first creating content for a client that comes out, and you do it all the time throughout the just general work.
Yeah, for sure. We have an actual process, and a quick shout out to my team who actually put this presentation together. You've done a great job. So I'm really excited that we're going to share that with everyone. But going back,
applause.
Yeah. Woo! the first thing we do when we meet with a new client is we go through a discovery phase, right? So we're going to do our keyword research for them. We're going to do customer personas. We're going to do customer journey mapping, because anyone can just start pumping out content. Oh, you have a refrigerator. Okay, here's stuff about refrigerators. No, maybe that's not what those particular clients in that area are looking for. So we have to understand that path before we do anything. It's like you can't build a house on a leaky foundation. You've got to have a strong base so that way you can move on up.
And you know, I think the most important part is the persona development, the persona research, where you get that from, understanding that. You know, and it's important, because quite often we'll hear, what's your target market? 14 to 55 year old males and females. And it's like, well, no, that's not a good answer. Put it that way, but we have to divide people up by their personalities and by their, you know, all sorts of different factors. And that part of the process we do with even the smallest of clients that we have that are just getting started. It's a simplified process, obviously, rather than an incredible deep dive. But these are very important foundational steps in understanding what kind of content to create.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the infographic on the right shows that, right? Like, there's an underlying sense of research that you want to do, even if you're the business owner of your company, to make sure you're highlighting all the different types of specific job functions, which role they suit in a company, but also like what position they hold outside, right? Like, are they a gatekeeper? Are they an influencer? So things like that are things that you definitely want to keep in mind when you're in this first step.
Yep. And we'll also use Myers-Briggs profiles, yes, which are very helpful as well. Yep. Yeah. So let's dive into this one here, Stace.
Cool. Okay. So there are three specific pieces here. So we have education, and we want to make sure that we are educating or creating that brand awareness to begin with. And in doing so, we're going to create a landing page that either can give you something like a calculator, mm-hmm, that, you know, might, maybe it's like a mortgage calculator. We want industry specific pieces that work well. So let's say you have an app for, you know, weddings. You want to maybe make sure that you have something specific that talks about how to write, you know, the best maid of honor speech. So something very specific to that particular, you know, industry.
Yeah.
And then we also have solution oriented, company focused material. So maybe it's a B2B play, right? And you have a white paper or something. If you gate that and it's specific for that particular like research or whatever, then these are three great ways, mm-hmm, that you can, sure, help them, you know, go through that buying stage.
And there's, you know, in terms of creating content and going through that process and mapping out what the content is, I think the important thing is that you've got to understand what the high perceived value is, understanding the pain point.
Yeah.
And providing that content will create a push activity from that potential lead, as opposed to you trying to drag them in and pull. And you make the content about them and not about you. So for example, in terms of case studies, you know, and it's a phrasing, it's a way to how we solved a problem, right? We'll get into that, but yeah, it's important to classify your content into, mm-hmm, these specific areas so that can be effective.
Absolutely. Chad brings up a really good point in chat. He says, you can't communicate effectively with someone if you don't really know who they are and what they're interested in, what problems, mm-hmm, they have and what they want to solve, etc. And that's exactly what it is, right? You're wanting to see what they need, what they're interested in, and what stage of the buying stage they're at so that you can communicate them effectively and not push too much information on them.
Yeah. And you know what? Another great thing about social media is, in terms of research, I mean, you've got wealths of information. You can go and do searches on Facebook, for searches on Twitter, you know, and see what, you know, what the stresses are, and what the pain points are in virtually any industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, for sure. And I should, on top of what Chad was saying there, it's not only knowing about the pain points, but when we use the Myers-Briggs personality pieces, the reason we do that is it actually helps us understand what types of content would actually resonate with, yep, that particular user. Mm-hmm. Are we going to do something that is more research focused for someone that, you know, is very analytical? Or are we going to go the fun route where we know someone's very extroverted, outgoing, a free spirit, that would really resonate. So it helps us determine that tone of voice, which is really important.
For sure.
And also determining at what point of your customer journey you've got a pain point. And if you can get that pain point, the reason pain points are so important is because if you offer the solution to an accurate set of pain points, you know what kind of content you can provide that will solve it. And you'll see your conversion rates go up and your acquisition and engagement rates go up as well.
Yeah, for sure. And that's where the content mapping comes in, right? You need to understand what content you already have, what content you need to create, and, you know, where does this content fit into your overall strategy that you're trying to create? Is it more of like an awareness, consideration, or a decision piece, right?
Yep, absolutely. Cool. All right.
Going back. So now we have, now we're going to be talking about conversion paths, right? So we're going to talk about a little bit about the types, what it means, and how you can maximize these. So Stacey, you want to take us through some of these?
Sure. So you want to start understanding, you know, are you going to be offering like a call to action for a resource that you're offering? Yep. Are you going to create a, you know, landing page that captures information provided by the visitor? Like, we want to get, you know, it's an exchange, right? So you want to have a strong call to action. You want to have a landing page that explains what that call to action is and incites some kind of emotion to have that user actually take that action. And then you want to thank them for it, you know, and confirm that they have provided their information, and then you give them the asset or enter them into the contest or whatever it is. And then you follow up with that kickback email. So after a short time, after the exchange takes place, again, it's nurturing that new lead that you've just collected.
Yeah, and it's starting that relationship with people, right? I mean, a lot of the times, you know, how many times a day are we bombarded with ads that are asking us for an email or to register for something and stuff, right? And it can get really overwhelming for people. So, and you know, your pages, your ads can get lost in that noise if you don't have these necessary conversion paths built into your strategy, right? So a simple thank you page or even a kickback email, you know, those are things that might be oversighted by a few people who are trying to do this themselves, but those can be really be the core of your strategy in creating that relationship with these people.
And yeah, I think go ahead, Dan. Sorry.
Go ahead. That's fine. I'm trying to pull up the presentation
here. Oh, okay. Yeah, no. What I was going to say is I don't think a lot of people put enough focus on the call to action. I kind of skimmed over it. But like you said, Matt, we get bombarded with a lot of different lead magnets every single day. So you have to have something compelling that actually really resonates with that user, because let's face it, you know, email has become real currency. It's not something that you're just going to give willy-nilly out, right? So you got to really think about that.
It used to be. I mean, I'm sure people used to, like, back in the day, just like, oh yeah, sign up for this, sign up for that. It's my email, right? But now this email is transformed to our personal, like, it's almost like our telephone now, where it's like, why are you emailing me? Why are you calling me? Do I know you? Right? It's one of those things.
Yeah. And, you know, in the next one, we're going to talk about the types of lead magnets and things like that. But, you know, an important part of this in terms of a conversion path is mapping out, and you can do it on a piece of paper with boxes and arrows, is what are you, okay, so you're going to create a great lead magnet that's going to solve a problem for your potential lead, right? And we're going to show an example of one of ours that actually is very well received in a second. But you also want to map out the conversational journey you're going to take that person on. Oftentimes it's, oh, I got a lead. Great. It gets put into my email database, whether it's MailChimp or ActiveCampaign or HubSpot or Pardot or whatever it is. And then you get hit with a newsletter once a month, right? As opposed to telling a story with those lead magnets. So, you know, if we use a bride as an example, and a bride is overwhelmed, confused, and stressed, you know, a million things on the go, you know, it could be your guide to calm and relaxation.
Yeah, for sure. Right? Absolutely. Sorry, I was just going to pull up the chat there for the honeypot live.
No worries. And so if you've got a guide to stress reduction for brides, that's a great first step. And then you've got to have a second and third and a fourth and a follow-up and a cadence that tells a story that leads that person through building a relationship.
For sure. Absolutely. Right? And it starts with this one right here. So we'll talk about the checklist.
Yeah, pull up Chad, and then Courtney made a good point.
Yeah, so Chad talked about if you don't have a strong CTA, people might not know what action to take. And they won't really think on it, and they'll just bounce. And Courtney agreed with him, saying that generalizations lead to vague copy. For
sure. Yeah, and if you're vague, you're going to be ineffective, right? Yeah,
absolutely.
So this particular example is a lead magnet that we have up on honeypotmarketing.com. And, you know, one of the things that we find is that our new and potential clients, we hear this all the time, is that they haven't had a great experience dealing with an agency. You know, it either was high priced and didn't lead to their expectations being fulfilled, whatever it might be. So what we did was we put together an agency checklist, a comparison checklist. Basically, as you're going through the process and you're talking to several different agencies, here's a checklist. Here are questions you can ask, and you know, we're confident enough that, you know, maybe you find another agency that's a better fit for you. That's totally cool. Mm-hmm. But we give this out as a helpful tool to enable our potential leads transparently, right? So we've identified this pain point a long time ago. We looked at it and said, oftentimes when we talk to new clients, they come from a level of frustration because they haven't had a good experience.
Yeah.
And so how do we solve that problem for them? Well, step one of solving the problem is giving you this checklist that you can then print out, or you can, you know, use Excel, or you can use Google Sheets. And it helps you with the interview process when you're interviewing other agencies, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just sort of passive, you know, introductions to people, right? It's that sort of giving them a way where they can just freely get some of this information from you. And then maybe down the line, they're interested in a little bit more. You have that sort of foot in the door where you can start an open communication channel with these people.
Yep, absolutely.
And just some of these, this one right here is just an image of one of the checklists that we have on the website right here.
Yeah, that's the marketing agency scorecard.
Yep,
right?
Absolutely.
So again, very simple, right? It doesn't have to be incredibly complex or have a huge technical footprint.
Mm-hmm.
If you're solving the problem that you've identified, and look, every business, you could just go and ask 10 of your customers, right? Uh-huh. For example, like one of the things that we find with our clients in digital marketing is there's this thought or this idea that digital marketing is a series of tactical activities. You know what? I need Google Ads. Well, maybe you do, maybe you don't. But yeah, that's cart before the horse. And a lot of times what agencies are selling is like Facebook Ads Management or Google Ads Management.
Yeah.
Without looking at the bigger picture and saying you need a strategy in this world, because there's so many different channels, uh-huh, right?
Yeah.
That without that focus, quite likely without a strategic approach, right? Even a simple strategic approach, we've got smaller clients that are doing very, very well because we've gone through a simple process of understanding. We've got a client that sells saunas, for example, and saunas are, yes, they're about a sauna, but it's not about the sauna. It's about the health benefits, the stress and anxiety benefits. You know, it's all of these other things around what that product solves, as opposed to necessarily the actual product.
Yeah.
Taking that approach. So we have a health and wellness guide for saunas, right? And it's very well received, and it generates lots of leads because it's a useful guide for people to download.
Yeah, absolutely.
I almost feel like a kind of a different way, or a way that we could describe lead magnets, it's almost like you're becoming a friend, a trusted resource.
Yes.
So instead of just going in and saying, buy these saunas today, 50% off, you know, it's more like, we've got some really useful information. You can trust us. We're your friends. We're going to help you and guide you through this path to purchase.
Yeah. And it's even if it's that sense of, you know, even though you're not a customer and you haven't bought anything from me yet, I still care about you, and I'm going to offer you this information just because you're interested in the products that I have to give you. I'm an expert in the field. Let me educate you, send you in the right direction, right? It's that sense of open relationship that you have with the lead.
Yeah. And you're not going for the jugular and trying to push people into a sale.
Yeah.
Right? It's much more of a attraction based marketing. Like that's the whole reason for the name Honeypot Marketing, right?
Yes. Yeah.
You want your content and your programs to be like a pot of honey.
Yeah.
Not everybody loves so honey, sweet, but a lot of people do. There you go.
So one of the next ones that we have here is just the calculators, right? So, I mean, we've already talked about the usefulness of these types of lead magnets, but the calculator is one of the better ones and one of the common ones that you can use, especially if you're in spaces where people are looking for estimates, right? People are really looking for a quick and easy estimate. Maybe just give you a few types of information, maybe name, email, and then boom, I'm going to email you your estimate.
Yeah, this works. You know, this is a tried and true in the online gaming space for calculating odds, in the mortgage space for calculating mortgages. You know, real estate and finance use them all over the place. They're certainly useful. And typically when people are using calculators, they have a high level of motivation. They're trying to solve a problem, right?
Yeah.
So if you've got a possibility for a calculator that can do a quotation or an estimate or an assessment of some kind, and look, there are quite a few platforms out there that enable this type of functionality. They come with a minor cost, but again, another way to identify highly motivated clients. People typically will not be, you know, spending 10, 15 minutes unless they're motivated for some reason or other. So there's an urgency there.
Like, I feel like it does one of two things. It can actually set expectations for that, you know, customer. Can I really afford a mortgage? I don't know, but maybe this is going to help me set that expectation that maybe if I crunch the numbers, this is actually going to probably work. Okay. And it also qualifies the lead, right?
For sure.
They've already kind of gone through maybe the first initial like quote step in your journey, right?
Yeah. Assessments are a great kind of meta step on the calculator as well. So quizzes and assessments that answer more complicated questions. First-time homebuyers are a great example. It's very confusing.
Yeah.
You know, there's the Canadian mortgage stress test, which is very difficult to pass. So some people do that, and then they go into a state of panic because the mortgage the stress test calculator says you're not going to qualify from one of the big three banks, right? So there's like an alternative series. Think at a higher level from existing calculators that might be out there. So Courtney's got a comment there that we should highlight quickly.
Yeah, Courtney says, these days when the basic content types are played out, I try to ask myself, what can I create that no one else can?
Yeah, and you know what? The idea may be that maybe you can't because a lot of things have been created, but if you understand your persona, you can create something that is very unique to them that answers their problem. So using the idea of a mortgage stress test calculator, for example, which is provided by the Canadian government, you could create either a chatbot or an assessment using any number of tools out there that would like Thrive Themes for WordPress has a great, it's basically a viral quiz, but it will allow you to score and do assessments and branching logic.
Yep.
So you could do a first-time home buyer assessment that has a whole bunch of different if this then that kind of branches to help walk them through and educate, right? There's a lot of calculators on mortgages, just plug in your numbers, but it doesn't hit the bigger meta level question that first time home buyers are going through, especially if you take into account their stress levels.
Yeah, and something that you could use to relieve that would be another lead magnet example that we use quite often, and that's a resource guide, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe for, like Dan was saying, a home buyer, why don't you give them a resource guide that either highlights maybe an area that they're moving into, their home, a checklist for moving, things like that, stuff that kind of really benefits the life of your leads and their interests.
Yeah, like, you know, one of the things that we do is how to pack mobile storage units, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't think that's a very exciting topic until you've actually ever tried to load one of those units. Because trust me, if you've got the whole thing loaded up and you realize it's very heavily unbalanced, or they say it's very heavily unbalanced, you got to go in, take it all back out and put it back in. So, you know, I think there's, with the resource guide, you're really scratching an itch, right?
Yeah.
You know, what is the real pain point here? And understanding that if you're somewhat of an expert in this, that you're going to forget more in one day than most people will ever know.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So if you're in the moving business, you got a moving company, you know everything about moving. You're skilled. You do it every single day, right? But people typically don't move all that frequently, so they're not experts at it.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, they might be really great Tetris players, but that doesn't mean they're going to know how to like load the mobile storage bin, you know?
Yeah, For sure.
I mean, I wouldn't know the first thing about it.
With this too, like with the resources and things, I feel like last live we talked about, you know, repurposing that your content and things. And when you create a lead magnet like this, this is a great opportunity to use this lead magnet somewhere else, right? Maybe you offer it to your leads, but when they make a purchase from you, you send them another lead magnet or a resource related to the lead magnet, right?
I have a idea that you could. Well, it's not my idea. It's out there. I know that, but let's be honest. But you could have a lead magnet that is, you know, your calculator, your quiz, and then on your thank you page, you could also maybe add the resource guide.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And it just grabs them right through it, right?
So. Yep, absolutely. The one thing to keep in mind to think about these two is go for instant gratification at the top of the funnel. You know. Try for not, real. Yeah, don't have a 20-minute assessment at the top of the funnel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Try to solve that immediate need. Try to be as brief as possible. The real goal is instant gratification. If you can do that instant gratification and hook them in, then you start telling the next step in the story to lead them through and either progressively get them through. I did a financial assessment from, I'm not going to say the name. It was very well done. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it took about 25 minutes. So it is extremely
quite a lengthy.
That's a dedication, right? I mean, you got to sit down and commit time. So as a lead magnet, I wouldn't say that that's such a great thing. As a middle to bottom of funnel, maybe breaking it up. Mm-hmm. Right. And then that is a much more reasonable way. But instant gratification is super important. Do not make it difficult when you're creating this type of content. And,
you can qualify them as you go through the process. It doesn't need to be done at step one, which is what I reckon that this company was doing. They're like, we're going to have a very extensive thing. We're going to only qualify the people that are actually dedicated to filling this out. But maybe there were a bunch of people that were interested that you just, you know, they went bye-bye because they're like, we don't have time for this. Right?
Well, yeah, you're asking a lot. So Pippa's got a great comment there.
Pippa's saying that she agrees with the instant gratification. If she's looking for something, she just doesn't want to spend time digging. She just wants her answer, her product, and move on from there.
Well, look, we live in an Instagram, TikTok world, right? Where it's like...
For real.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, we've created a series of social videos that actually highlight... certain things within a 30 to 45 second time span. So you're typically only talking about one thing, mm-hmm. but you can certainly make your content snackable and very specific. That's also another strategy you can use in your content creation. I know we're on the infographic side.
Yeah, so that leads into the infographics, right? Infographics are a really great way to grab people's attention and really convey information in a visually pleasing way, obviously, but also really quickly, right? People can grab this information really quickly, understand it. It's short, sweet, cuts any fat out. Mm-hmm. They're awesome to track on SEO, awesome to use on social media, even on your websites as well. Really versatile, I guess, use of lead magnets here for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Like this is a great topic because it's also 15 grammar goofs that make you look silly. If you're in marketing or if you're in writing, you may look at that and not even like it piques your interest. Maybe I am doing something wrong. Geez, I don't know if I'm doing something wrong. I'm going to check this out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and engage with that content.
It's scannable content too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you know your audience is very busy, again, this goes back to understanding who your customer is, and mm-hmm. you know that they just want the deets, as the kids say, quickly.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, but you know, infographics are really cool and they're a great tactic, but make sure when you develop them that you take the time to really edit and understand what those like 15 grammar goofs are, right?
Yep, for sure. And I feel like there's a unique opportunity for branding and not branding as well, right? Obviously, with branding, it's going to look really nice and uniform with your company. But at the same time, if you don't brand something like an infographic, It might be a little bit more generalized for people, and it might be a little bit more, I can't find the word for it right now. Maybe sincere is what I'm trying to say.
Well, you want to be useful, and you want to also pique interest, right? So that's where creating your content takes time. And I think a lot of times, especially if you're in the agency world or you're in a marketing department, actually, if you ever get a chance, there's agency TikTok. It's actually pretty funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's some good ones in there. Hashtag agency TikTok.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, where hopefully you've got great clients that understand that these things take time. But I think there's got to be a focus on the appreciation for taking the time to put thoughtful effort into the type of content that you create. Because if you have a crappy topic and you're just, you know, listing out the features of your product or something like that, that is not going to engage. It's not going to help anybody, yeah, right?
For so real.
You got to take that time. On the question of branding, I think we've talked about this before, is having some flexibility in your brand for the right channel, right? And not being too hard. If you're resource limited, right? Go for simple, right?
Yeah.
I think a bunch of years ago, I said, you know, if all else fails, select a bold headline font, two color palette, call it a day. It'll look good, right? Like keep it simple without trying to overdo it. That you can provide some flexibility and still maintain your brand and have something that looks good. It just really depends on what stage your company or your brand is at and how you want to convey it.
Oh, for sure. And I think that, you know, with marketers especially, you know, we're such creative thinkers and we're so fast paced that a lot of times, you know, with these campaigns, it's always like, okay, how can I one up this one? How can I do something different to really kind of like make sure that this one shines? But, you know, like if you had a really great campaign, you don't always necessarily need to do anything more extravagant or anything like that. If it works, it works. And maybe you can redo the copy or the graphics, but it doesn't need to be like above and beyond this grand thing. You know what I mean? I know, Stacey, you that kind of like your eyebrows were like, oh yeah, I know what you mean there. So it's true.
I catch myself doing that a lot. And then I take a step back.
Overcomplicate
it. And then I'm like, okay, but that worked. So I think the key is really understanding your metrics. That plays an incredible role in understanding what worked and what didn't. So that way, if you do want to optimize and level, you know, up your game, so to speak, you know what worked on this campaign and what worked on this campaign. And now if I bring them together, what are winner chicken dinner, right?
So can you pull up Courtney's nurturing leads comment? Because I think that's a good one.
Yeah, for sure. Courtney says that nurturing leads should be valuable to any business that is serious about sustainable growth. It's not always the case. And that's for sure, right?
Mostly not the case, to be honest with you. Yeah. I have these conversations multiple times per week with clients, advocating for a nurturing process, advocating for the creation of consistent, useful content that develops relationships. And you know, if you look at companies and people, especially people that have very strong personal brands, so how did they do that? Let's say I'm a financial advisor in Vancouver in one of the wealthiest areas. I've been a financial advisor there for 35 years. I'm well known. I'm on TV. I go on BNN. I do whatever, you know, and I actually have a group of followers that I can influence, right? Well, they've been doing this organically for their 35-year career, right? And that's kind of the point. Mm-hmm. What we want to do is operationalize that and bring your company into that with that type of influence that they're seen. Like HubSpot is seen as a company that creates a ton of useful content. So people want to sign up, right?
They trust them.
Yeah, Wistia does the same thing. Mm-hmm. MailChimp does the same thing. So you look at these very successful brands that do it, and their lead nurturing process is substantial, and it's built billion-dollar companies off of that.
For sure.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, you know, because of our tagline and the way we position ourselves oftentimes, you know, it's like, you know, it's like people want to go out and hunt and kill.
And it's all about, like, the nurture. Like, even, you know, an advisor that may have been in business 35 years and 35 years ago, we didn't have the technology we have today. What did he or she do? They picked up the phone. They called. Mm-hmm. They nurtured, right? Yeah. Same kind of thing. It's just evolved over time.
Yep, exactly. So let's go back into the content a little bit to our last example.
Yeah, our last example is ebooks, right? So these are, you know, these can be lengthy and in-depth pieces of content that people really dive deep into, right? This is a sort of stage where people are taking the time to read your content at length, mm-hmm. maybe even share it. And, you know, you can do a number of things with it. Today's day and age, you can make it like an ebook. You can send it to people, get it printed, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
It's versatile.
There's a lot of things you can do with ebooks. I mean, you could publish that and put it up on Amazon Kindle and actually say that you're a published author.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people do that. The one thing to think about with ebooks, too, is I've seen ebooks that look like they've been typed in just a simple, like the standard Word document format with very little. And some very influential people that have a lot of that type of content, but they do tell good stories. So if you're going to write an ebook, make sure that it's one, that you've got the topic, right? But again, don't kill yourself over the design of it. I've seen many, many times where the content will trump that design. And yes. If you've got a good ebook and a good story to tell, then, you know, it's great at a certain point in the funnel or people with certain with certain wants and desires. So one of the big ones in the world of entrepreneurship and small business is how to break through glass ceilings. Happens all the time in business. It's a big challenge, you know, where business owners and business founders hit a glass ceiling. They spend years at a certain revenue level or certain size and find it to be a very frustrating process and how to break out of it. Well, I've read several ebooks on what you need to do in order to break through those glass ceilings, right? And how not to get frustrated and that kind mm-hmm. of thing. Those are very useful.
Sure.
Because, so for example, whenever I've personally been looking for that content, maybe I've hit a level of frustration. So I want to take the time, right? So it's that getting somebody from a before state to an after state, like a state of frustration, a state, whatever that state might be, into a state of satisfaction and happiness. Apple does this all the time with their products, mm-hmm. right? I'm frustrated with Windows. Windows sucks. Okay, I'm going to pay 45% more for a MacBook. I get it. It's clean. It's pretty. It's beautiful. You turn it on. It's got the little happy face. Off you go. Bing, bing, bing. But if you think about Apple being one of the biggest brands in the world, they take people from a before state to an after state quite often. And they have amazing loyalty. So, you know, it's this understanding what the before state is and what the after state is and how you get there.
And
then that's how you create that content. Yeah.
Yeah.
And your ebook can evolve over time, right? So let's say we did an ebook on 2021 social trends. And then next year you can have version 2, 2022. And then maybe you have a dedicated audience that comes back mm-hmm. year after year to download your latest version, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. We're no Apple, but they could do that.
Well, I mean, you know what? I think part of it is, as big or small as you are in terms of what kind of content you're going to create and how you're going to do it, there's creativity. Mm-hmm. Also partnerships with other experts, right? So mm-hmm. getting other people to participate with you and give you their feedback, right? That's a great way to help ease that off. But if you have the mindset of an Apple, a Facebook, a Google, or, you know, whatever brand you want to aspire to, there's a great story of Movement Watches, right? Two kids, they were in their early 20s. They now have a multi-billion dollar watch company because they totally identified the gap in the market, which was, you know, cheap watches look cheap and expensive watches are out of reach, right? Mm-hmm. So they really learned and understood that. But you can, by understanding more and delving into the mind of your customer and your lead, you can create all sorts of really useful content. And hopefully this was helpful in terms of getting those wheels turning, because, you know, we could have just done a list of the types of content you should create, but it's one of those, it depends, right? It really depends on your client, your product, and how you solve problems.
For sure. Yeah. And as you do more of it, you become more akin to, like, what type of content would be appropriate here, what I can do to further my content, and if it really worked or not. Right. So some really good stuff that we talked about this week. It was a little bit of a lengthier live this week, but that's okay because we got lots of really good stuff in here this week for you guys. So,
absolutely. All right, everybody. Well, we will see you next week on episode 171 of Live at the Hive, Digital Marketing from the Trenches. Take care, stay safe, and we'll see you next week. Peace.
See you next week. Bye.